All right, should go on to the next team. Our squad, the Gary, the V squad, the Fives, the Clowns. I feel like it was meant to be.
What do you think of that Forbes guy saying you were the reach of the draft?
That guy.
All right, we did it. We found the coolest brand in pickleball. Look at those colors. Look at those designs. And also, if you haven't, go to warstick.com and check out their bag. Tell me it's not the coolest bag in all of pickleball. Discover Warstick, the sporting goods powerhouse known for its top-tier baseball gear, and now offering an extensive lineup of premium pickleball equipment. From the court to the field, Warstick's pickleball paddles are unmatched in blending artistry with high-performance design. With options for every player, whether you're a casual enthusiast or a competitive pro. Don't forget to check out their stylish premium bags. Just mention those. Perfect for hauling your gear in style. I'm serious. Just go like peruse their site. They have like a sick camo paddle. The bags are very cool. Shop now at warstick.com. It's not the weapon, it's the warrior.
Wow, you have it right there. It's cool.
Can we leave that in?
Ryan, how long have we known each other?
Approximately 2 years.
I still can't say your last name.
Pickleball.
Okay, yeah, we'll go with that. We've got at Pickleball on the podcast today, fresh off a Major League Pickleball draft. I gotta be honest, I didn't know you were a GM until I saw like a social clip of you.
I didn't know I was a GM until I saw it too. But it was basically like a one-day turnaround from finalizing our interview and signing the contract and kind of getting going with the Rangers.
Really? It was that quick?
Yeah, I mean, we spoke three times in the previous week, and then it was like they extended the offer, and I thought it was a good one. I was very excited by it, so then they said, hey, we'll have the crew over to the lab tomorrow, and we're going to film some stuff.
Tell us about the lab.
The lab's an Austin-based kind of content factory where we've got pros training every day. Zane's one of them. You may see him on the clips. Mm-hmm. Mr. Lowlight there. But
anyways, you guys do great work over there at the lab, making me look like an idiot.
Blame the editor.
You couldn't tank my draft stock enough.
Yeah.
We tried.
He was paying us. But it's basically a one championship court training facility where the pros play and train every day. And then we certainly are kind of starting to be a fixture within the local Austin pickleball community where we host Moneyball, do group lessons, live ball clinics, and really just trying to be a hub for the higher performance pickleball that's emerging. So it's cool. Carlos and I been doing it for 3 months now. Feels a little bit longer than that, but it's been fun. And we work there and have no excuses to not be on the court and hitting a lot of balls.
Yeah. Is that the guy that does the Rafa Nadal impersonations?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. He's very good. He's very good at Rafa and a lot of impersonations.
It's like every time we think it's hilarious and then we like put it on social and just like one like.
I posted everything in pickleball last
summer where I had Carlos on the other side of the court and we flipped the video so it looked like he was hitting lefty and he did it a voiceover and there were so many people like, wow, that's crazy. That's incredible.
Yeah.
I'm like, man, if I was really out there hitting pickleballs and grinding with Rafa Nadal, don't you think I would have like taken a picture or something? Like just the stuff that people believe on online is pretty epic. Like April Fools with the pickleball community, you can have a field day.
Yeah.
Absolute field day. Yeah.
Got a little out of hand. Let's see.
You want to elaborate?
No, people just believed what they were seeing, including Serena Williams, which is the one we did.
One of our mutual friends sent me that on text.
Yeah.
I didn't even have to read it. And I was like, oh, come on.
It's not true.
Yeah.
It's April 1.
But then real news came out and it was a little confusing. The whole day was...
What's that?
Well, the Johnson 5 coming back in.
Oh, yeah, right. And then people were texting me that, like, is this April Fool's? I'm like, that's not a funny April Fool's.
Well, yeah, but in the niche of pickleball with everyone, like, so hungry for everything, it's like, I wouldn't put it past you or anyone to do it.
Yeah, if I were Christian Alshon, I just want to do clickbait, get a bunch of engagement, I would go for that.
So do you think, wait, hold on. So do you think Christian knows the game that he's playing and doesn't agree? Or do you think this is a true opinion held by Ryan's first round draft pick?
Because most people are saying the former, I'm standing by Alshon and I'm taking the latter opinion. He knows what he's doing. He's a showman. He's like Vince McMahon. Yeah. He's just stirring it up. I mean, he got over a million impressions on that thing.
Yeah, he's poking the bear.
I mean, it's pretty cool when you have Nick Kyrgios, Andy Roddick, James Blake, a bunch of different pickleball pros. You got Renee Stubbs coming out of the woodwork. I thought she had left pickleball.
She's the worst.
I love seeing her pop into things.
Has Noah Rubin chimed in yet?
No. Well, he now pretends pickleball doesn't exist because his
he had a wild arc.
Yeah, he did.
Like burning bridges. Like everyone welcomes him in.
Right.
Yeah, it's tough.
Yeah.
Yeah, R.I.P. Noah.
All right, but you have, I feel like, a third credential in pickleball. So you've got MLP GM, you do the lab, and I thought you were doing one other thing in pickleball. Is there another project you have going?
A good friend and I, Braxton, and I were writing a newsletter focused on the business side of pickleball. So talking about...
Yeah, dude, I knew that.
The reset. Yeah, but that's on pause for now as we build up our bank account in these other pursuits.
Got it.
We do have plans to bring it back, and he's kind of like the wonderfully smart analytical Excel former finance guy, and I was kind of the ideas themes, like what are we feeling here. So
the vibes guy,
hopefully rooted in a little bit more nuance, but yeah, a lot of vibes, a lot of people and a lot of vibes.
Cool. So. All right, so this will be, we'll go through like each team, we'll kind of give our opinions, we'll talk about highlights, lowlights, but just generally. Okay.
Yeah,
your first draft as a GM, what was it like being in the war room?
Wow.
Second. So you were a GM for another team?
Columbus last season.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So this is your second time around.
You didn't give him the prep?
No.
Obviously,
little prep goes a long way.
We didn't do enough in our quarterfinal appearance in Dallas to be top of mind for you. But yeah, so this was the second draft. The first one was in Premier for the Sliders, Columbus Sliders. And that was a fun one. That was a snake draft. And that was held in Central Park, and that was a doozy. I mean, all drafts are pretty intense in terms of what you want, what you think you can map to with previous successes, and you know, everyone has their own instinct and gut on player and team formation. So never easy. I think this one was quite a real time roller coaster, and then leading up to it, there's obviously way more open questions because you know, you just previously, you could have done mocks, and I think it would have been reasonable to do mock drafts because it's a bit slower and it's obviously structured, and you can kind of formulate the talent, like the talent skill pools, where you know, where things degrade after X players on both men's and women's. But the auction base was like to model off of 11 other owner and GM incentives, personal takes. You know, it's just, it was impossible.
Yeah. So. For those of us who are, just for the people listening, this draft followed a very different format than previous ones, right? Previous drafts were, you have one pick at the beginning, one pick per round, essentially, and it snakes around. This time, the GMs were all given $500,000 of, we'll call it monopoly money, and they could bid up to $500,000 of real money to select their four players. Actually, I'm sorry, to select their four draft positions.
Yes.
There's an auction for every draft position. So the first overall draft position went up for auction, and the Seattle Pioneers decided to bid $500,000 of their monopoly money as well as $370,000 real money in order to select the first pick of the draft. Once they selected their draft pick, they then chose the player, Ben Johns. And that's the way that this draft worked, which is very different from all of the previous ones.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I think Ryan is saying, in that previously you knew going into a draft, you would have the first pick, the 13th or the 24th pick, whatever. You knew exactly where you would be selecting. Now you really had zero idea. You had no idea when you were going to be picking,
right,
or how much other players were going to be going for. So
good explanation there.
Well, I feel like it was something that wasn't even clear to me as like a week and a half ago. So I figured we wanted to clarify that. How do you prepare for a new draft format like this on 48 hours heads up that you're now the GM of the Ranchers?
Awesome. It was tough. I mean, I think it was impossible to mock and simulate on the behalf of 11 other GMs and groups, as well as their first player that would really inform their process. So for us, we did all of our homework on really understanding what our list was on both the men's and women's side, and making sure we probably had kind of eight a piece that we'd be very happy with taking in some combination. And so that really, I talked with 24 players for at least kind of 35 minutes in the weekend before, trying to cross-reference what we believed were good teammates who had performed well within an MLP context, who you think had a higher ceiling or another level or two to go. So a lot of player interviews were, one, about them and their availability, their health, what they're working on, and two, using them as a source firsthand, especially if they've been around for 2 years, of like, what is this person actually like to play against or compete with? You know, if I pitted player A and player B over the next year and a half in a team context, who would you invest in if you had your GM hat on? And so that really gave us a lot of clarity around our own kind of perception of players rising and falling. And we took a look at one mock draft that some GMs had, and it was relatively interesting. And the third was trying to just, as best as possible, figure out the decision tree of basically like assumptions of, if everyone came out real hot and if 8 of the 12 teams started spending and they spent $500,000, $600,000, $700,000 for their first kind of draft slot, what would that actually entail? Does it get soft through the middle where you can actually make moves and you should be patient and not be part of that top eight? Or if everyone comes out slightly conservative, which I think after two teams, it really did, it did slough down and soften up, then you're like, oh man, there are a lot of teams here in the mid pack, and we really can't be necessarily waiting to go, you know, pick 11, pick 13. And so we just really tried to play out those scenarios as best as possible. We spoke with one fantasy football expert who's like ranked globally in the top 10. I think that was a little bit, that was a nice data point, but for us, it didn't really map to pickleball because of our talent density on the men's and women's side. And also the idea that our players have to play together, right? They've got to play two events and they have to play together. Fantasy football, you get McCaffrey and, you know, a great wide receiver, but they're on different teams in different cities playing different opponents. Like, you're just summing their points. Mm-hmm. Here, it's not a raw talent accumulation because, you know, two mid-level players who are good can actually function better with those individual, like their respective partner, far higher than another mid-level player. Mm-hmm. And so that's what we were trying to kind of dig into to form that like kind of Tetris puzzle piece.
I'd imagine the main thing that you might want to talk to that person about is more so just the draft sort of psychology and sure. game theory of it rather than the yeah. pickleball of it, right? Because like you said in that reference, if you it's like fantasy football to an extent, but if you do have two running backs on the same team, you can have Christian McCaffrey and I don't even know. Like, let's see. Who else are good running backs? Yeah. It's been a little while.
He's not down with the league.
But, like, if you have two running backs, they're both getting you a bunch of points.
Yeah.
Whereas here, obviously, they need to mesh
for
together.
Sure. And the other thing that most folks in fantasy would say, whether they're an expert or you view the historical kind of last few years of your, how do you apply your $200 to spend, they would say, pay up for elite. So you really kind of front load a McCaffrey or a Mahomes if you can, and you pay kind of $45 or $50, which is a quarter of your budget, for as elite as you can, and then you hopefully hit on the kind of lower at the end of the arc. You kind of hit right. on a value pick, you know, or a sleeper. Here, I don't think that's possible. And Zane and I discussed some draft stuff before, and he was quite helpful in helping reframe his perspective, which is historically it's largely been Ben's team or a very good team that like really came together, both on court and off court, to play higher than, you know, their individual levels have really indicated. And I think Squeeze and DC are actually good examples of that. And that's what we tried to model because, you know, over like spending $600,000, $700,000, $800,000 for one player leaves you really, really lopsided, I think. And you don't have, it's not necessarily the talent on the third and fourth rounds isn't bad for sure. Everyone's good. It's just that you can't actually have your choice of the configurations, you know, so a lefty righty or two women that are really comfortable playing together. You don't have your choice of that when your budget's so low after going out hot. So we elected to try to build a very good team that, you know, is going to go into MLP event one in Atlanta and be very good and hope. And, you know, I think continue to get better based on the trajectories of all four of our players.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, the other added thing that we're talking about this time is you now have the option to have multiple players for multiple years. And
right.
so pricing
right.
growth in
for
has
sure.
never really been much of a consideration when last year we were only drafting for
three weekends. Yeah.
3 weekend season that's taking place over 5 months, right? Like, and now you have to think about, okay, this team, I mean, it is a consideration of ours, right? With sure. with the fives. We have Mari Humberg and Will Howells on our team, and we'll go through all the different teams as well. But like, if we were drafting to win Atlanta, like we would probably be picking an Irina over Mari Humberg or an Eric Lang over, I don't know if we're taking that over Will Howells, but like,
yeah,
it adds so much more strategy into it.
For sure. I think people had to like insert arms, but like understand trajectories. Like someone is a good known quantity and that's good, but there's someone who may be like as good or like slightly below them, but like, you know, week in, week out or month in, month out, via the results, via the practice sessions that you can kind of get a signal on, like they're advancing really quickly. And I think we're fortunate that all four of ours on the Ranchers are like kind of on a path where like, hey, there's another level or two for each of these players to unlock. So that's what's exciting. And yeah, Zane's Horizon comment was certainly very impactful for this draft as opposed to the last one.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
We could talk about draft strategy for this whole episode.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, this is the last draft ever. So,
well, I think we're going to be using the auction on the waiver wire. So, like, there will be pickups. You know, trades go live, which is another factor, but I think that's a little bit down the road. But when you drop one of your players after the end of year one, there will be another pool of players where we'll re-enter into an auction.
Will everybody drop a player?
Yes, everyone is required to drop one player. Really? You do not have to designate them until it's the end of the year. So,
okay.
Two players stay on for 3 years, one for two, one for one. Who that one, it remains to be seen. And hopefully it's a tough choice.
Why'd you say three years, like your number one player? Couldn't Annalie be on the fives for 15 years?
No. You have to talk to Samin, who, by the way, did a very good job of running this draft, both technically and also kind of format-wise. But I talked to Samin. But I think that's down the road question, but theoretically, like, you would have to peel that person off after 3 years. Or we may be transitioning to a true free agent market, mm-hmm. where the league doesn't have player contracts anymore and the teams have the incentive and the responsibility to attract players to their city and to their franchise. Right. So therefore, like, hopefully in time we can get there, and people who can promise players like high performance and a good city and good marketing have an advantage in now getting like ultimately that free pool of players to kind of elect to choose them as their team. So it's all a working equation, but
I think these 3 years are sort of a bit of purgatory between what the league was and what the league wants to be, because we do have players under salary from the league itself for these next 3 years. That was the signing war, right? So we need to figure out what to do with these players during these 3 years until we maybe change it to a different model where the New Jersey fives are actually paying me directly rather than the league paying me directly, right? And so I think we are still not in MLP's final form right now.
Yeah, okay. All right, should we go through and we'll each give, I mean, obviously you have a team, you're on a team. So aside from your own teams, who do you think was the winner and who do you think was the one loser of the draft? You're going to have to be harsh here. You're going to have to ruffle some feathers.
I don't know. We could just do the grading of these if you want. And we can go.
What a cop out.
Oh, well, let's do that at the end. We'll do an overall winner, an overall favorite, and an overall 2023 season one Frisco Pandas.
Okay. Let's do it. All right. So we won't go by this graphic here. We'll go by, it might be with this graphic. And we're going to throw this graphic up on the screen so everybody can see it, so you have a point of reference if you're watching on YouTube. But let's start with the Seattle Pioneers. That's Tom Dundon's team. We've got Ben Johns, Andrea Coop, Jesse Irvin, and Colin Johns. Our writer, Eric Tice, gave this team a C. Have to disagree with him on that one. But Ryan, let's go to you. What kind of grade? What's interesting to you? What jumps out about that team?
I have to disagree with Eric as well. I give him probably like a B+. I think they're quite solid. I mean, Ben is Ben, and Ben won or competed really well with the Slice last year. And so I mean, I think they were going to be a C or C minus with the way things were shaping up, like picks 42, 44, 47. But they rounded it out with some veterans that will kind of be led by Ben in both play style and kind of team. And I think they're definitely in the mid pack and are like, you will have to beat them. They will make a lot of balls. And Ben is Ben. And what level of Ben you get, I don't know. But it's obviously very good. And Ben and Colin are like probably a top two men's dubs teams in, you know, again, we've never seen them in MLP and stuff like that. So arguably they're one of the best. And I think they like over delivered relative to
their draft position,
for sure.
Outside of the one.
Yeah. Like I think they scrambled and were fortunate to get a really solid team in 2, 3, 4.
Yeah. So they took Ben at 1, Coop at 43, Irvin at 44, yeah. John's at 47. I mean, when you're looking at, like, it's creeping into the late 40s and you're grabbing Coop, Irvin, and Colin Johns, like, that's a pretty good pickup at that point in the draft.
Yeah. Well, I mean, my opinion here is that people potentially priced in the growth factor of players too much, right? And there was a swing too far away from the players that you think are at their peak being or on the downside being... I think people are pricing that in for Andrea or Jesse, that these are maybe people that you don't want to have on your team 3 years from now, mm-hmm. right? And so in the meantime, they're still damn good players. Let's go win. So I would say, like, if I'm giving this team a 2024 grade, I'm going A minus. Mm-hmm. If I'm giving this team a 2025 grade, 2025 plus, like, this might be a C. I might agree with Eric.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So pop out.
Colin will win a few mixed matches. Everyone writing that as a zero in the win column. I think he'll win a few mixed matches.
Yeah, for sure. He definitely will. I mean, when I look at this team, I'm like, okay, you potentially have two very high probability wins. And then you just need to win one more match. In a dream breaker, I don't think they're going to be very well off. In fact, I think they're going to struggle a little bit, but...
I don't know what I think about dream breakers anymore.
I know.
I lost the Chicago slice in a dream breaker. Yeah. I don't know what I think about dream breakers anymore.
It's kind of like penalty kicks, where it's like, it just...
Yeah.
It could be anybody.
I think it's like... Yeah, even the dominant team, I think it's like a 60-40. 65-35 that they're going to pull it off. Like, anything can happen.
Dundon, of course, is the one who grabs Ben. Do you think, were you surprised by that 840 where it landed, 840,000? Were you not surprised that others didn't bid him up to max for Ben?
I was a little surprised it didn't approach 900, but again, that's all relative because we'd heard a lot of folks being like, he's got to go 970, because effectively 970 would have given you the picks that they had.
Yeah.
You know, like in the mid 40s, late 40s. So I thought he was going to be in the 900s for sure, but the other person could say, well, if he's going to go 900, why wouldn't he go 970? So I was a little surprised by the number. I wasn't surprised that Tom took him. And Ben was actually at the lab a few days prior, and I was like, what do you think you're going to go for? And he was kind of like joking, like, I'm going to go 970. And so I thought he had one or two teams really kind of reach out to him and prepare him for the idea that he needed to find some 2, 3, 4 gems.
Yeah. I thought he was going to go. I mean, we talked about it. I thought he was going to go 970 as well.
Plus the bid off.
Right.
In the Zoom room.
So if two teams went up to 970, that 970 is the most that you could spend on any one player. Which is 500,000 of your Monopoly money, 470,000 of your real dollars. If there are multiple teams that both wanted Ben at 970, they go into their own room and throw more real dollars in a private bid for that position, which I thought we were actually going to see.
Yeah.
Like, I really did think that we were going to get to somebody who wanted that. Whether that's the right position or not, like, I thought it was going to happen. So, interesting that it didn't, but...
How often did that happen?
Never. That's the only possibility would have been the first one. Or if you had a late pick, round pick.
Yeah, if you're late, if everyone was down to like 19K and 19K for their fourth pick, you could theoretically have gone to pay, you know, $5,000, $10,000, $20,000 in a in a private bidding process for them. So it was, people were pretty smart and mindful of, in the second or third round, trying to really be conservative of bids, because you knew even $1,000 could give you the choice of your pick over someone else in the fourth. Obviously, you can't plan everything out to a science, but people are pretty mindful of that. And so, fortunately, unfortunately, we didn't have any tie bids.
All right, should we go on to the next team? Our squad, the Gary, the V squad, the Fives, the Clowns. I feel like it was meant to be.
What do you think of that Forbes guy saying you were the reach of the draft?
Well, fuck that guy.
I think he posed it as a question, to be fair, but... yeah.
Well, all right, then fine. But if I'm the reach of the draft, then you got to say that Hayden was picked one spot ahead of me. Like, that's a pretty... I think Hayden's more of a reach than me. And then Gabe picked two spots after me. Tyra was a good pick after me. Like, I think you can't simply call me a reach of that draft without also lumping in Gabe and Hayden.
Yeah. I find it so interesting that, like, a Hayden will... I mean, he's seemingly just valued so much higher than he would be if you were to just go, like, bet on a PPA tournament, right? Like,
yeah, but that makes sense. That's where I feel like the people, like, this is a different, it's like same, same, but different, you know? It's just like, yeah, it's pickleball, it's two on two, it's doubles, it's men's, it's mixed, whatever. But it's like the team format, and some people, a la Zane, like, have risen to the occasion more than not of wanting the team environment, wanting the pressure, wanting the ball on your paddle, wanting to speed up at 19-17, you know? It's like, that's like non-trivial. And if everyone had that, then we wouldn't really be weighting anyone differently, but not everybody has it. And so I think Hayden and Zane are appropriately valued in this draft. And I think I had them in like a mid-tier, you know, probably like the 10th, 11th male to be picked, but certainly spiking an MLP in a team in a kind of on the line competitive context where they seem to come to life even more. And so it's not to take away from your tour results, but I've always thought of you as an MLP kind of gamer, and not everyone is. Now we've seen, what do we have, five events, four seasons, something like that. Like, you can see who's like really feels in their element. Hayden's there.
Yeah.
He plays big. He wants the ball. Like, he wants the ball. And if it's in men's or mixed, you know, he wants it. And a lot of people just don't want to make a mistake, but he wants it.
Okay, so Annalie goes 2. You go 22. Once you join the team, are you immediately like talking to the GM and the owners and Annalie, like, what are we doing next? Actually, I saw a clip of you and you're like, I haven't even been told yet.
Oh yeah. So actually I was at Tim Klitsch's house. They had a little rancher's draft party and brought my new wife and my new dog and my old dog.
Humble brag.
Humble brag. But I was just sitting there and Evan came up to me, Evan from the ranchers, and was like, sorry, man, we wanted you. I was like, huh? He's like, you're about to get a phone call. I was like, oh, okay. And so Lee Waters calls me up. She's like, Zane, what do you do? Like, we got you and Annalie. We like this team. Like, let's go. And so I was immediately on a call with Ryan and Lee and Annalie, and we knew we had some time before we were going to make another pick. And so we started immediately looking at like who else we wanted, who was realistic. But honestly, like, stretch of the draft at 22, like, maybe, but like,
no,
at 165, that's a pretty 100. So the interesting thing, $165,000 at the 22nd pick is, if you have four picks and can spend $1 million, your average draft pick should be 250, right? So I went for well less than an average draft pick, even though I went at number 22 overall, which I just think is interesting. I think there was some, that mid to end of second round was a really soft underbelly for value picks. Like, Tyra went right after me. Now she went for, I think, like 200 or something like that. But that was, the picks got cheap there for a minute.
Yeah, that was some of the fun, like, real-time dynamics of, like, is it getting soft because it should get soft? Are we trying to get soft? Should we overstretch here? Because you're trying to figure out when you should zig when other people are zagging or whatever the reverse is. But it was a weird – there were probably five instances of, like, a jump up on the next pick going up another 10, 15, 20.
Yeah.
So I think Gabe, everyone was like, whoa.
Later,
yeah.
Gabe, two picks later, I think went for like 210 or something like that, didn't he?
Yeah. No, I think it was a hefty, there were some hefty jumps.
So Hayden went one before me for 205. Gabe, or no, wait, where's Tyra?
Yeah, I'm just like, I want to hear the takes on Humburg and Howells and what your general assessment is of them and how like Will Howells is going to go before like a Colin Johns or Pablo
Travis or Eric or
Travis. Yeah, like the list goes on, right?
Yeah, no, I mean, we're pricing in growth for sure. So like with Mari, what Anna Lee really liked the way that she plays. She's got a nasty slice and potentially one of the best backhand flicks on the women's side. Not even necessarily on the women's side. One of the best backhand flicks I've seen. She's still sort of on the rise, so she hasn't gotten like your stud partners, but she's also had some really good results. Like I think she beat Anna Bright in something a couple weeks ago.
She gave Anna Lee and Catherine a good game in Arizona. Like, yeah. I think that Anna Lee was on the receiving end of some of those flicks, mm-hmm. and kind of just like hard volleys that you don't quite see necessarily in the women's game right now.
So like, we know Mari's getting a lot better. She hasn't been at it for a tremendous amount. We know she's a gamer because she played good level tennis. She's, I think, 27 or 28 and is going to be moving to to either here in Austin or Florida or something. So we're all in on her continuing to get better and continuing the trajectory that she's on. And it's the same with Will Howells. So again, towards the end of that draft, we got Will for 55K, and we were between Will and Jack Monroe, the Austin boy. And we just thought like Will is getting so much better and trains with the Anna Lee crew, so there's some familiarity there, and we're looking at a team that we want to win not only this year but year two and year three. And I think we've got it. I think every one of our players is going to continue to be better the next year than they are this year. Like, we're all growing, I think. So that's how we ended up with Will and Mari, and I think we're stoked about it.
You guys get access to the RV?
I'm going to demand it.
Yeah.
It's now
in the contract.
It's now a clown's RV.
Yeah, you should have a huge clown on the side.
So Will.
V friends only in there.
There we go. There's a lot of those guys,
though.
That was
such a Zerpy pickleball, like, 2021 phenomenon. Like,
the
that
V
was,
friends?
Yeah, that was...
That's 20. Yeah, that's
2022.
Hey, we like it.
I remember seeing
him
in Daytona. It was wild.
Yeah,
like they were just out there in force. It was.
I saw like, one with a clown's shirt. I lost my shit yesterday because we were going on to the Whole Foods to get some Ben and Jerry's because I wanted some. The new topped stuff is pretty good. You had that yet? No? Okay. But anyway, Ben and Jerry's topped ice cream, new sponsor of the pod. But there's a guy walking out there with a five shirt in the wild, and I lost my shit. I was like beeping at him. I was like, let's go.
Wow. There we go. Okay.
How many other MLP shirts have you seen in the wild, IRL?
I've seen a few Breakers ones when I go to San Francisco and play at the public parks there, but otherwise it's been slim pickings.
Are you a Gary Vee fan? Are you inspired by his content?
Fuck yeah, baby.
Hustle every day?
Yeah.
Enough said. Yeah.
Cool. I like it. All right, let's go to St. Louis Shock. So, Anna Bright, Hayden Patrickwin, Gabe Tardio.
Oh, wait. I have one more thing. Did you see Will Howell's story?
No.
Instagram story? Pencil it in. He's getting a clown tattoo when we win 2024 MLP. I told him I'd join him.
Will you?
I'll get a clown tattoo if we win.
That's 2024. Content right there.
Flip it.
Yeah.
Wow. I mean, sorry. When we win, I need to figure out where I'm going to get my clown's tattoo.
Yeah. Okay. There's a place on South Congress right by the White Tiger. You can go right in there. Right by Jenny's.
Perfect. Is the dink going to come? Gary's coming.
Yeah, dude. We'll
already penciled it in.
We'll do some content around it.
Ryan, where are you going to get your Rancher's tattoo? Like, if you guys ever win in like 2030 or something.
Wow. Savage. I don't, probably in like the right tricep, you know.
Right tricep.
Just flex it after you hit a nice speed up or something.
That's so cool.
I mean, where else, for a guy who doesn't really want a tattoo, where else am I going to put it? Oh, I got a lot of forehead real estate. It's one of the biggest foreheads in
pickleball.
You get into
dicey territory if you do that.
Yeah, it's tough. It's tough. I don't need to make life any harder.
All right, St. Louis Shock.
Let's do it.
Anna Bright, Hayden Patrickwin, Gabe Tardio, Kate Fahey. Kate Fahey, another one of those kind of lesser known names. Seems like a reach. They're playing the upside on that one. I know a former college tennis player, but what do you got, Ryan? Give it a grade.
B plus, but I will preface that by saying I think they do really well in one or maybe two of the weekend events for MLP this season. I think young, combustive, aggressive energy that's, you know, could be a buzzsaw, I think, for a pool and premier. And so I think, yeah, I mean, Anna's a gamer, Hayden's a gamer, Gabe certainly has premier talent. And I think I've seen Kate play a few times. She's gotten some quality PPA wins. She's played with her friend Johnson Cole, and she, if she's like even half of what Rohrabacher was in the first season, like that team gets really, really competitive.
Yeah, I think we're going to call this a
Young Spice.
I think we're going to call this a boomer bust team if we're going to keep going with the fantasy football analogies. Yeah. Like, I think, you know, I've seen matches spiral away from Gabe. I don't know Kate. Hayden is a gamer, and obviously Anna is a gamer as well. I think it's a boom or bust team, and I would be surprised if they don't win like a weekend, right?
Right.
So I'm going to go, it's tough again, because like I'm going to go B minus team for this year, A minus team for year 2+.
Okay.
They can get hot. I think if they get hot, watch out. Every team's got to watch out.
All right, let's keep going because we're like 35 minutes in. We've got a lot of teams to go. All right, Columbus. Riley Newman, late entry into the draft as he tends to do. Megan DeZahn, Connor Garnett, Brooke Buckner. So Riley goes 4 overall. Surprise, no surprise. Would you see him going ahead of like Anna Bright? Or you think that kind of fell where you would have expected?
I think he was right there in line with 4. An elite male who obviously has good experience at DC last season. I think one of the owners of the Sliders, David Gass, former tennis guy, I think probably likes Riley. Adam Stone was helping out with the Sliders. I think he knows what he's doing. And I mean, I think it's a good team. It reminds me of Dallas last year, where you had Jay and Iggy and Callie and I think Elise. Like, it's a good team. I don't know if they can spike up to be great consistently, but I think it's really well constructed. Brooke was high on our list. She's really solid, and she's coming up to form. She plays really well in mixed, and obviously is a singles threat if we want to get to the Dream Breaker. So Connor's got another level. So I think it's a B, or it's like very understandably good. I'm not sure they'll dominate, but I certainly don't think they're going to be bottom of the pack.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting. I think there were a lot of questions about, you know, are these 200-day players, the people who didn't take a NUCO deal, do we know if Riley still has to do all these clinics or not? Like, or was there just a carve-out for this? Like, do we know how much Riley is going to be able to focus on playing? Like, is he going to be playing PPAs? Has that been determined?
Yeah, he'll be playing PPAs.
Okay.
Which, by the way, the least surprising thing of all time.
Yeah, I mean, we figured that would be
the
case.
That he came back.
But nothing in the last 6 months has surprised you. You're more on the record of saying that's not surprising after it happens.
I texted him when he said he was not playing PPAs anymore, and I go, I think it will pay off, though, referring to him not playing. Bet PPA ends up offering you a nice sum to come back and compete. So was there a nice sum? Did he just have a change of heart? I don't know, but he's back, and I think I would have predicted that.
He's a force. And I think the one concern, you know, that he obviously addressed was he going to get elite touches against the best players every 2 weeks on the tour? And some other people would take the flip side of that and said, hey, he's going to treat MLP like the crown jewel in his World Series. But the other person would come back and say he's not getting the touches and seeing the ball and the patterns. And obviously he is. So I think it's a worthy investment.
Yeah. I just, like, I have somewhat of matchup concerns here where this is a team where we have not seen any of them play together, and there's got to be concerns about style, right? Like, who's Riley playing with? Is he playing with Brooke, or is he playing with Megan? We don't know which one of those players is going to fit the mold to play best with Riley, right? You know, who's going to play the left and right between Megan and Brooke? I think Megan typically plays the right with Etta, if I'm correct.
Yeah.
So I believe Brooke prefers the right as well. Connor and Riley, like, we know Connor's probably going to be playing the left in that. Connor much prefers the left. So I think there's just a lot of questions style-wise on that team. So I'm going to give it a C.
Okay, what do we got next? AZ Drive. Andre, the philosopher, at number 5. Dylan Frazier, number 13. Lacey Schneeman, number 34. Caitlin Christian, 35.
Well, I knew they were going with Andre when we logged on to the GM owner Zoom. And fellow pickleball man, Morgan Evans, was unmuted and was, like, talking to Andre, like, while we're all on the Zoom, ready to start the draft. So we were all like, okay, I think Andre's going to AZ. And he did, for a good amount of money.
When you hear that, do you decide, like, okay, let's bid this one up?
A little bit, but I think to get to that question, a lot of people had, like, hey, you should consider bidding people up, and, you know, because it's zero sum, and you can, you know, if they're out over their skis, then you can clean up in the mid-round. It's like, it's not... We didn't ever want to spend $600 or $700 for one person that wasn't Ben, because we wanted to create a really well constructed team. So it was like, yeah, that would be an amazing story to tell on a podcast like this. But in reality, it was like, you don't know what's going through the other keyboard, you know, or like of 3 or 4 teams. And so right. We just never wanted to be in that position because it was tough. And I think AZ is a decent example of, like, Andre is playing extremely well. He's played extremely well in MLP. He's getting results. You know, he's scaring Jimmy, and he's very good, but constructing a team around him, I think I ultimately give it, I'm like, a C+. I think Dylan has yet to really find his groove in MLP, even though he's an elite, probably top 3 right-sider. Lacey has her ups and downs, but she's a gamer, and she's quite good, and she can play quite aggressive. And then, you know, Caitlin Christian is kind of like the Kate Fahey or Will Howells type upside pick. I think Will Howells and Kate in a doubles context have shown a little bit more results so far. But Caitlin Christian is like an elite athlete. She kind of moves like Thomas Wilson on the women's side. She can play aggressively in women's. And so there's no shortage of athleticism there. I think patterns and hands and soft stuff and decision making, like, needs to be found pretty quickly if they want to compete this year.
Do you know the most interesting thing about Caitlin Christian?
Apparently
other than her global double tennis ranking?
She was a stunt double for Emma Stone.
Oh.
In a movie. And then she played one of the tennis players in that, like Will Smith, Serena and Venus movie.
Wow.
She's got an interesting background.
There you go.
I'm gonna give this one a D, based on previous
history. Zane doesn't
history.
Like on a curve.
Clip it.
Based on history of going guy in these drafts, right? The most recent history being very near and dear to my heart, the Frisco Pandas, as well as the Hard Eights from last year, going guy in the first 2 rounds.
Has
not paid off well for any team that I can think of. Do we have an example? Obviously, this is a different team, different year. Do we have an example of going guy in Premier and having a strongly successful team?
I mean, I don't know if it's inherently bad that it's guy-guy. Like, if I gave you two guys that you really like, then you'd be like, hey, if you do a good enough job on 3 and 4, like, it's probably the risk was worth the reward. I thought guy-guy was a very bold and contrarian take in this draft. You know, the previous snake drafts, I think it could have made sense, but especially with where fourth round second women were, I think guy-guy was really bold. Because, you know, I don't know. It's tough. It's tough. I think everyone should be... This was a real new experience for everybody. And so not to be like Mr. Nice Guy, but I think when you want Andre and you see Dylan, I'm like, that kind of makes sense. They play together. They know each other. Mm-hmm. Maybe Dylan doesn't have to be the guy like he had to kind of be forced into last year. So,
yeah, I mean, it's
we'll see. We'll see, you know.
I had this.
Where was it, a D or D plus?
D.
Yeah. There's no such things as D pluses. It's yeah. This is D.
D's are fake. Yeah. D pluses are fake. But I'm prepared to eat that. That's okay. Move on to the Hustlers.
Yep.
We got Jack Sock, Jackie Kawamoto, Leia Jansen, and CJ Klinger. Eric Tice gives that a B plus.
When I saw Jack Sock go, I was like, wait, what? And then I heard after the fact that like some people were like, I thought he was going to go like 3.
Yeah.
And he went for more than Andre. Andre went for 530 at the 5th pick.
Yep.
And the 6th pick went for 550 to Jack.
Okay, so here's the other asterisk. The option to pick Jack went for 550.
The option.
That's what everyone, like, as we discussed this and leading up to, is like the option to pick someone affords you the choice because things get wonky when there's FOMO of like, hey, I think this team is also going to pick this person. It's not saying Jack's worth 550
right. or
55% of your total capital. It's saying the choice to get an elite male that may be Jack that you can guarantee is 550. And so that's why sometimes you see that.
Okay.
And so that subtle nuance was like, if you don't internalize that, then everyone, you look at these numbers and it's like, oh, Zane for 170. It's like, no, if you think there's a mid pack of males that are MLP gamers, it's like Hayden or Zane, like the choice. And if one's off, other people are smart and know that Zane has gamed and played well. So, and is going to be good to the team environment. Just the thought of getting a Zane is where the like zero sum FOMO comes. And you don't know which teams are motivated by that. So that's why it felt like a perfectly constructed movie, like Nathan for You kind of thing, because like, you didn't know, you just don't know. No, it was just like, you don't know. And it's like, we're not ascribing that value to that person. We want the choice to have to pick him or her.
So what you're saying here is if you are a GM that equally values Jack Sock, Andre, and let's say Dylan, when all three of those players are on the board with the 5th pick, you're not as motivated to, you might not be motivated to even bid 500, but when Andre is gone and then Dylan is gone and you're left, Jack is really the only person that we still want, you might 3 picks later or 2 picks later be wanting to bid rather than the initial 500,
sure.
You might be up to 650, even though you're getting your third choice.
Right. And if you have an intel or a spidey sense that someone else wants him, that's why you take him off the board slightly prematurely at a higher price, because you're like, hey, a lot of our decisions downstream depend on Jack being the guy for us, and we want Jack. And so
yeah, I think we should normalize premature, but
but yeah, that's the subtle psychology that was present in every second of the 4 hours of every decision to bid or not bid. It was like,
yeah.
You know, and that's where later in the draft, when you needed a man and someone needed a woman, you were okay with them winning the bid. You were never okay if you knew that they had a shot of choosing the same woman as you. Right. And so that's why the teams are tracking like, hey, Dallas needs a male. They're bidding right now. We only need a woman. We don't need to like get out over our skis. If Dallas wants to take it, they'll take it, because they by necessity aren't choosing a woman that's really high up on our list. So it was subtle things like that. Shout out to the whole Ranchers crew and all the eyes and ears in a craziness discussing what was going on.
So yeah, what do you think about this team? They got Jack, Jackie, Leia, and CJ.
You think it's the best women's doubles team?
Me? Who are we talking to?
Please clip that.
is it the best women's doubles team? I guess I hadn't really looked necessarily at that. I lean no.
You've got Jade and Catherine on the Mad Drops.
I think Jade and Catherine are a better women's team.
Coop and Irvin on the Pioneers, depending on how they play together.
Irvin. Georgia and Tyra are going to be up there. Yeah. Vivian and Paris could be up there.
Yep.
So actually, yeah, they're pretty top, and I think they will play well together. I'm assuming Leia on the right and Jackie on the left. Jackie can play strong right as well. They could also kind of mix it up there. So I do think Leia is one of those players who has some events where she's just like unbelievable, and some events where she might be like not playing her best, right? I think there's variability in her outcome. So they certainly could be the best women's team on a given weekend, I think.
Is Klinger an upside pick?
Well, he has
He's been around for a long time, right?
It's a challenger goat. He's won a lot of times in challenger when it matters. He's like handled himself well in Dream Breakers. He's played him and Todd Fote. Fote's having an amazing weekend right now in North Carolina. I think they just had another
Todd
upset. Todd
Fote is one of the most underrated pickball players.
He just makes balls. It's crazy. But yeah, Todd and CJ did really well in challenger. I think CJ is an upside pick by the definition. He's never played in Premier, but I don't think it was surprising that CJ went. I think it was a little surprising he went to the Hustlers. I'm curious what they had as their kind of second or third pick as of a male there in the late fourth, but we'll see. I think it's an interesting collection of personalities and characters, I'll say that. Like, Jack is main character energy, wants it to be fun, wants the spotlight. You know, CJ is a gamer, but obviously a little bit more reserved. Leia has, you know, her ups and downs. Jackie's like steady Eddie. Like, you know, it's just an interesting, when they go to a team dinner, it'll be an interesting dynamic.
I actually thought that they're going to pick Jack Monroe in that spot. I thought that was a, I thought Jack, Jack was going to go.
Jack, yeah. Jack with Jack.
I thought that they were going to go, and they got a Jackie too.
Yeah, that would have
been. The triple Jack.
Wow.
I thought they were going to go Jack Monroe, but CJ just has the wins under his belt.
Yeah.
All right. What are you giving that team?
C+.
I'm going C.
All right,
Thomas.
The Ranchers.
Why don't you have to give out rankings?
We published them. B+.
Oh, Eric speaks for you.
Yeah. Why not?
Okay. The DingPickleball.com
until he has a bad take, and then I say that's not me.
He was grading on a curve, though. He was real nice.
I mean, I already said
we need
a balance on a curve.
No, we need between Zane and Eric. I think I present that middle ground a little bit.
All right, we got the Texas Ranchers: Christian Alshon, Etta Wright, team. Tina Pisnik, and Pablo Tejas.
Nice. You can go.
No comment.
It'd be more fun for you to lead with your grading, and then I can give my grading.
Yeah,
and can
D rip. Minus. Fuck you.
There's no such thing as D minus.
Dude, you got three F bombs on this thing, Joe. Yeah.
Sorry, man. I'm heated. All right.
We need the algo to help us out. We actually did the other day. We got some sort of flag for obscenities.
Did we really?
So that's on you, bro.
That is 100% on me. Dude, we've got the Stop Alzheimer's Now. Sean told me that, like, I haven't been swearing enough. And honestly, I don't know what episode it would have been, because I've been, like, he says I've been a church boy recently.
No, you always do it in these moments where you're, like, get giddy, and then you drop an F-bomb, and you're like,
You get giddy because you're about to say something really positive and complimentary.
No, I just get giddy because I got to support the Pro XR and Game Plus. They're matching the swear jar.
Yeah.
Bleep.
Okay,
out.
Let's go. Give us a grade.
I like your team. I'm going to go B+. I think four players that are going to continue to improve. Christian, obviously, I've played alongside him, and he's getting so much better. But also at the same time, like, we had a first round loss 2-3 weeks before we made our finals run. Like, there's good days and bad days with Christian. And I think that's natural for somebody who's, you know, making their way up through the ranks. Etta is a little bit more steady, still on an upwards trajectory. Tina's on a big upwards trajectory.
She's into a semifinal in mixed, North Carolina, with our boy Deckel.
There we go. And Pablo, I'd say Pablo is strong. I think he's honestly seemingly at his level. He doesn't, recently, he hasn't seemingly had any crazy good results. To my knowledge, no crazy bad results. Seems to be struggling a little bit in mixed, which is somewhat surprising. So I'm not sure, you know, who he will be playing mixed with there. But three players who are pretty clearly growing, and to get Pablo, who's been a staple on the podium with Federico for a while, in the fourth round for 13K, that's a solid team. Did you know going in, did you have a target in the first round of who you wanted?
Well, this sounds too cheeky for a podcast, but if we went female, this was the team we wanted. We can show you the receipts on the spreadsheet.
Yeah, let's see.
If we did it differently, like if we did female, it was like into a Zane Hayden bucket quickly thereafter with the mid round. But people came out soft for the top, you know, for the 2 through 7 or 8, and so we knew we weren't going to be able to get an Etta or Tina like a little bit at a discount. So yeah, this is actually the team, and we told the team as like, it was developing in real time, and they're on the Zoom like, this is who we dreamt of and like had to kid ourselves. Like if we got this, we would be, you know, we'd be ecstatic, in which we are. I think Etta's clearly a top five woman, maybe number three, maybe number four, and has another level or two to go. I think for folks who ask, can Alshon be the guy? I think if you laid out his resume, just like by the numbers, he's showing he can be the guy and wants to be the guy for how hard he's working, the coaching he's getting, the playing crew he's in, and the results. Like when you go to semis in a full main draw tour event in all three events, like you're becoming the guy. Like you're not hitching your bandwagon to anyone when you're getting to the semis or finals and singles. And when you're a top five mixed guy, when he's on, and when you're beating Ben, like the two top men's doubles teams with Zane, I'm like, that alone, never mind you throw in the cheeky, he's the only guy to have won Premier and Challenger. So like that alone, and if you understand Pickle, it's like his trajectory is just insane. And I think he kind of represents the qualitative interviews we're doing to figure out like, are these players hungry? You know, guaranteed money has been really stressful the last 6 months. There's a lot of events coming up for both MLP and PPA. It's like, are these players hungry? And I think all four of them are unquestionably hungry and putting in the work. And I think we have a good or very good team now. And as Zane was pointing out, like I think in 2, 3, 4 events, we'll only be even more special. And then the bonus side story was Christian and Etta are about to play some mixed events together. Etta and Pablo have had some good results in mixed. Three of them are South Florida. Tina's just on the rise and is just kind of a stud and a mature competitor. So I'm really excited about the team composition. And I get that there isn't necessarily the quote unquote elite known male that's been around for 2 years, and but as a team, like we're really, really excited. And yeah, I think it reminds me a little bit of the Squeeze. Not to be cheeky, but you know, it's like when Andre was drafted, you're like, oh, he's good, he's veteran, he's a competitor, but he wasn't, you know, like it was remains to be seen just how good he could be. Zane wasn't seen as Zane when the Squeeze drafted him, you know, and the same with Rohrabacher, like had upside.
Coming up the pandas.
Yeah, no, but I mean, like, that's where I think Christian could in 6 months be like, wow, he's a top 3 or 4 guy across all events. And I think that's a very reasonable outcome. Yeah. So with the 2 or 3 year horizon, it's like it's a no-brainer.
He's gone from challenger to fourth round to first round in the last few drafts.
Yeah, I mean, we're pumped, and he doesn't mind being a public figure, or I mean, he loves that he's the fact that he's chosen first round. And he should be. He's put in the work to do it. So.
And he's electric on Twitter.
Oh.
Do we want a sidebar to that right now? Or do
we can. Yeah, I mean, like, I was just following that constantly refreshing, just looking for more, more food. I mean, Christian was just in the trenches battling three massive names alone, fighting for pickleball, and no one was coming to his rescue. I don't know why.
I mean, I don't think there could be. Who could be coming to their rescue? Because like a Kyrgios and Erotic don't see anyone in pickleball as their equivalents on an athlete or a competitive stage. So like even Ben chiming in, you know, to plus one Christian or the general point, like I don't know if would have carried that much weight, you know, like you would have needed their own big tennis representative, like an Agassi, to be like chiming in, who's played it and, you know, slightly and says, you know,
yeah, you
never
would need
give
someone from the tennis world to come in and defend pickleball.
Yeah, because no one from right now we're it's big tennis has its establishment and obviously has its history. And but I like the idea that like Christian was just sharing a take and it's a bit of a spicy one and certainly going at the bear and the incumbent. But he didn't like at those guys. You know, it's like if it was so nonsensical of a statement, I don't think they should engage. They've got millions of dollars. They've got families. They've got careers. It's like, why are you on the tweets engaging with this, like, quote unquote, like, never competitive tennis guy who played pickleball?
Because it's fun, dude. Elon's still tweeting out there. He doesn't need
Elon's.
Yeah. Do you follow Roddick? He's like constantly on Twitter going at people and like. But
I'm just saying, like, if there's some merit, there's some contention for it to even be engaged with over the course of days. Because otherwise it would just be like trolling spam. It was not bucketed like that, you know? And they came into his territory. So
let's read the actual tweet for the people who didn't see it. But Christian just tweets. And he's always tweeting stuff like this. Like just, you know, kind of bold statements, a little bite to him. Just seeing what kind of engagement he can stir up. This one happened to be caught by, I don't know who the first one to respond was. Whether it was Blake. I think it was James Blake. But he tweeted, "Pickleball has made me a much better athlete than tennis ever did. Faster reaction time and speed are needed since the ball is only coming from 10 feet away. Point for point, pickleball requires more skill than tennis." And so it was James Blake who kind of snagged it and was the first one to reply, broke it into the tennis
the
world.
Bait.
Yeah, and James Blake goes, "Haha, that might be because you were playing a pretty low level of tennis. Maybe if you were familiar with the athleticism it takes to excel at the sport, you would realize how ridiculous the statement is." Nick Kyrgios follows up, "Yeah, let's hide under the bed after the statement. Ha 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 ha, bro. Get me the best pickleball player and compare his talent to Roger Federer. Wild tweet, wild thought. Delete right now. I love pickle, but you had too many tequilas."
This is
pickleball needs.
Well, yeah, but also these guys are in the tennis world. These guys are probably pickleball's biggest defenders as well. Like James.
Yeah, no, that's true.
James and Nick are like both love pickleball.
But James is no longer has a team. The Masters.
Oh, he doesn't.
That's fair. But
the Masters.
I don't think that's James's fault. Is it?
Yeah.
That's James's fault.
Yeah.
Scratching.
It's not the hedge fund guy that
scratching pickleball.
No, I think the hedge fund guy followed James. Is like it's not. He doesn't want to be doing it anymore.
Interesting.
Former ML Palooza star. No, I'm not. I'm serious. I wouldn't.
He's capping.
Andy Roddick goes, "It's pretty hard to say one of the most ridiculous things on Twitter in a given day. Tell you what, anyone pickleball
that is a very good tweet
person
Twitter.
Ever ranks higher in tennis than what Sock will be at the end of the year in his new paid pickle hobby. I'll commentate a pickleball match standing on my head. This ain't a real discussion, fun game, dumb conversation." And then there was a bunch more. And then Christian issued a challenge, which, by the way, has been followed up on. And I think they're actually entertaining making something happen between Alshon, who were some of the other that email.
So Tim Parks loves to make bets, and so he's talking with
the least quiet hedge fund guy of all time.
He's talking with some other people, and he is like, "Okay, what happens if Christian plays James Blake? Christian in tennis, Christian gets to use a tennis racket. James has to use only his hands. So they're playing a regular tennis match. James does not have a racket, but he can catch the ball and throw it back and use one pivot." So let's say Christian not a crow hop, a pivot. Just, like, he's got to have like one pivot foot.
Yeah.
So Christian serves, James catches it, James throws it back, and they continue the rally in that way. And I was like, first off, how the F, I'm not going to swear, I got called out on it, even though it's for charity. How the heck do you come up with something like this, Tim? And then also, like, this is a great idea. Who wins this?
I mean, the YouTube algorithm can't really separate out tennis from pickleball for me, so I have a decent exposure to a lot of the tennis challenges that are happening, and I've never seen anything like this be proposed. It kind of feels like a ricochet shot against Christian just to even have it proposed in this manner. I think he would win, but I think Tim is probably taking the perspective of James being like, can this guy make shots? And James will be able to test him very deliberately. I'm like, can you hit three backhands in a row if I'm in this position? Can you hit a forehand down the line? If you hit it, you'll win, but you have to be able to hit it. And right. I think it slows it down to making it feel like the magnifying glass is on Christian a little bit more, because there's not the traditional tennis rally going on. It's like, you know, prod him any which way.
Catches the ball, he can throw it wherever he wants.
Right.
And I think the biggest thing is going to be the serve. I told Tim this. I think the biggest issue is going to be the serve and the return. Christian, I think, is going to win, should hold his serve every time. It's very difficult to return a tennis ball with a racket. Now, the biggest issue for James is going to be the reach on a serve. You can slice the ball pretty far away from him, pull him off the court, whatever. Like, and also, James's serve is throwing overhand into a box. He can't really get that much on a serve either. So I think Christian needs to win the point within the first shot. Otherwise, I think it's a pretty good bet.
Yeah, I mean, I would have put it past him to come up with a good bet where it does give you the hemming and hawing. But, I mean, James better be able to catch with his offhand.
Yeah, like, that's
he's going to have to, full extension. Even on a non-serve, he's going to have to fully... I mean, what happens if he doesn't catch it?
I'm assuming any drop has got to be a point for Christian.
Oh.
It has to be. Like, how else could Christian score a point then?
Well, it's like a clean winner, or James doesn't get a hand on it. But, like, if James extends and blocks it.
I don't know. This is why I
feel like the challenge is, like, a little, like, training wheels-esque.
I think it's got to be a clean catch, and I'm predicting Christian winning 6-1 or 6-2 if it's a set. If this happens,
I would love. I mean, Christian before this had texted me asking for the MLP schedule, because it is, I think, very real. Like, he wants to find a time and place for Alshon and Blake to go at it. But let's not take away from the real point. Is like, Christian is not afraid to be in the limelight. Like, and he's already visible given his vlogging and his results and his on court play, but he's not. I don't know if he's like seeking it out every day, but like there's certainly some moments where he wants to be in the conversation. And you know, as a player, friend, owner, GM, not owner actually, just GM. I'm like, I love it. I think it's cool.
He showed up to
his
PPA debut with long hair, sleeveless, tatted.
Yeah,
you know, being loud, big fist pumps. Well, like he. Yeah. He's playing a character, whether it's deliberate or that's actually who he is. And we need more of that. I'm a big fan.
Yeah.
That's why I'm a proponent of his battle.
James Ignatowicz played a character for a year straight in the most recurring way, too. You know, like it's, and we're talking about him now because he's very good, but he's also very known.
When the first time I saw Alshon, as I said, long hair, sleeveless, tatted. Real loud,
serratus.
Flashy player. And I just texted Pardo. I go, this dude, Alshon, is the villain we need.
It's good. I mean, yeah, we need it.
The pickle box.
The pickleball box?
The pickleball box.
Just kidding. It's the pickleball box.
The pickleball box.
It is a subscription box.
Gear, accessories, apparel.
And it comes straight to my door with all the hottest pickleball gear in here.
It's so hot, I can barely...
Over $250 of value in each box, and you only pay $99 for each one. Go to thedink.shop, undoubtedly, the best gift for any pickleballer, or if you're like me, or anybody who listens to this, you're obsessed with pickleball, this is honestly like the perfect thing for you.
Okay, so what do we got next here?
Should we speed run the rest of these?
Yeah, we have to.
All right, let's do it. DC pickleball team, James, Rachel, Rohrabacher, Deckelbar, Elise Jones.
I think it's a more, I think it's like a pretty, I think they could do well. I think that's a pretty sound team.
I think it's an A minus.
I think that team.
I don't agree with the B.
Rides or dies on if Deckel shows up. If Deckel shows up, that's a team that can win every event. If Deckel doesn't play well or mesh well with his partners, I think that's a team that does poorly, to be honest.
Yeah,
but I think it'd be like Rohrabacher, Utah Volume 2, where you're like, everyone coming out of last season was like, Utah's stacked. Anna Lee, Thomas, you know, it was like, they're bound to do well. So I think Zane's assessment is spot on. But so like much power. One of the most powerful women, two of the most powerful guys, like crazy.
All right, we got Mad Drops, Catherine, Thomas, Jade, and Hunter.
You think it was a reach to go Thomas right after Catherine there?
I think they wanted to reunite the Mad Drops.
Yeah, a little
Thomas is
reminiscent
top,
of Mad
top
Drops
five,
from last
six
season.
Guy. Like, I don't think it's a reach to put Thomas as a top five guy.
Do you think Hunter Johnson is a good pick to round out that team?
I think Hunter Johnson was a rough pick, and there were a lot of other people on the board at 39 for that pick. But I think Thomas is familiar with him, so could work.
New
I'm giving that
gang.
I'm giving that a C minus.
Catherine went number one overall in the first draft, didn't she?
Yeah,
she did.
But number one overall. It had to be a female pick in the first.
Oh,
one.
Right. Yeah.
So
yeah.
She went number one female in the first ever 2021 MLP.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
All right.
We
what's your grade?
Squeeze.
Speed run.
C plus.
Squeeze. Federico, Vivian, Paris, Jay. I give it a. Oh, man. I'm partial. I love the squeeze, guys.
I'd say B minus.
I'm gonna go B minus as well. I don't know. Fed and Jay are like a tough matchup with one another. Yeah.
Are you surprised they didn't go Pablo there?
Collection at the dinner table. It's like the wedding table where you're kind of like put in the extras and they're just like.
Yeah, that
we're
was
all
me at somehow Zane's wedding this weekend.
No, you were at a
pickleball table.
Yeah, oh. Yeah. I was with. Deckel, Maddie Torn was there.
Stefan
was there.
The fact that you can name these people means you weren't at the like stranger.
Yeah, you
table.
Knew all of them.
All right, cool, good.
Who was at your table? You had like
Maddie and his wife, Maddie Pickles and his wife, and Ahmed, and his now wife, and then another Austin guy and his girlfriend, Drew, I think from.
Oh yeah, Andrew.
Melbourne.
Meredith.
Andrew.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, it was great. We had a rectangular table.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Wild.
We can get into wedding gossip later.
I did take a picture because Coop's husband was wearing court shoes.
Yeah, those Wilsons. Somebody pointed that out to me. They were like orange and blue Wilsons. Yeah,
big rackets guy.
This is a pickleball wedding.
Have you heard
then
a
I
better?
Him, I was like, do you play? He's like, no.
Have you heard a better best man speech in the last 5 years than what Althoff
you gave? Could tell there was more he wanted to get to. And he
Althoff could have gone for half
yeah,
an hour.
He could have, right.
But answer, have you heard a better best man speech?
No,
unless, I haven't. Nothing comes close in the last few years for me.
Yeah. Does he always call Jenny priceless?
This was new to me.
Oh, really?
This is new to me. He started calling Jenny priceless.
Okay. Yeah.
I think he forgot her name.
Stories.
Yeah, maybe.
It's a good story.
That's fine.
All right.
My only regret was Deckel and I left too early to see you shirtless dancing on the.
This is true. Well, one of my buddies who likes to take his shirt off didn't want to be the only one without his shirt off, so he helped me take my shirt off. And meanwhile, I wasn't even drinking. I was just double fisting baked bear ice cream out of the dance floor. And so when the guy started to take my shirt off, I was like, all right, this is a great excuse to change into the party shirt that I have, which is the same party shirt that I wore to the draft when they said you should wear a suit and tie. I wore a blue and orange shirt of tigers eating pizzas. And so it was just a natural transition.
Nice.
Anyway.
Seamless.
Dallas Pickleball Club. J-Dub. Georgia. Tyra. Augie.
If J-Dub brings it and feels comfortable, they're very good. But similar to, what was the other team?
The Hayden. Hayden. And,
yeah. But if things aren't clicking, I think it can be a pretty rough go. I mean, Augie's probably the best upside pick of the whole draft. I mean, the guy's just solid.
Nah, Will Howells is the best upside pick. Anyway, sorry.
Augie has some PPA results. But yeah, I agree. Augie's up there.
And is Augie an energy guy? Does he bring the energy?
I think he's good energy. He's a good teammate.
Is he going to be able to carry the energy? Because this is a pretty mild team.
I think you can have energy without being loud, but
yeah.
I think Augie's a fighter. He's a competitor. Like he may bring a little bit of bite to them. But I mean, it's J-Dub and Augie, if they're firing on all cylinders, will be a very, very good men's team.
Tice gave it an A+.
I think it's a little,
I don't know if I agree with that.
In the context of if you put aside the context of MLP, I think on paper it's very good, and there's certainly upside there, but I think there's some risks. Like Georgia and Tyra, they need to be on. They need to be consistent. Sometimes they've got some dips. J-Dub, I'm very familiar with him given last season of Columbus. He's like ridiculously talented and a great guy, but sometimes like an MLP hasn't felt that like kind of fit, you know, similar to what a Dylan has gone through.
Yeah. So. I think I like this team a lot. I would say the J-Dub has found a really, really good fit with Dylan, because Dylan can play offense off of the bounce. The knock on J-Dub is if you can make the ball bounce on him, he's not going to do anything, right? Whereas Dylan's actually playing most of the offense on that team, because if you give Dylan a dead dink, he's speeding up a ton. And I don't know if Augie is going to do that off the bounce. He does have a pretty good forehand where he can sort of step around Pablo style. So if that's working, it's going to be a solid team. I like the team. I'm going to give it an A-.
Okay. Utah Black Diamonds. F. Tyson McGuffin.
F. Next.
And his BFF Loong, Callie Smith, and Alex Trong. Has there been any mending of the bridges between McGuffin and Loong yet?
I saw Jimmy tweet asking for a truce.
And there's just no response on it. How long can
they... It remains to be seen.
How long can they maintain the beef? I mean, if they're smart, they do a podcast episode where they, become friends again. Everybody would watch that.
That would be cool. Yeah, that would be cool.
Maybe
I think they're veteran enough,
middle ground,
late enough in their careers that they still have got game, and like they shouldn't hold themselves back from... I don't think they want to be the Frisco Pandas or the Bouncers this year. Like, I think they will put it aside. I don't know if it will be great, but I think they'll put it aside to not have it block them from playing on the court. And we'll see what the combinations of talent can produce. But this one was only team to really not spend close to the max, and was kind of a curveball all the way through.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think Tyson and Matt put their stuff aside a couple of years ago. Like, I think Tyson will do what it takes to win, right? Like, I think
Tyson and Matt?
Matt Wright. They had to play this bubbly event in Las Vegas in 2022 at the end of the year.
Young and Sam Querrey. Yeah.
And like they put it aside to try and win. And I think more than anything else, I think that Tyson wants to win, and any of that other beef is secondary to that. So I don't think he's going to let a beef dictate their team. Like, I think they'll figure it out.
All right.
I feel like a low-lying beef with a very pointed flare-up, like on that when they played singles together. Yeah. Like, I don't know if it's as consistently beefy day in and day out when you're not at a tournament, but best of luck to him. Shout out to Alex Drouin getting the bet, getting the nod.
What do you think of the biggest premier level snubs? Rafa, AJ, Travis, DJ, Eric Lang, women, Irina.
I think when you're pricing in growth, you can't necessarily call any of those people a snub with the possibility of Eric. Like, Eric's been on an upward trajectory, but then you look at him, he's 40 3. And I think people look at that number and not necessarily the trajectory. It is tough because all of these players are certainly, if we were playing another 6-month season, they're absolutely premier right now. If you're playing, you know, at the end of 2026, there's a fair argument that none of these guys are there. Potentially, I don't know. There's a fair argument that I might not be there, right? Like, it's so hard to know.
We may not be there, Thomas.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Well,
we may not even be able to comment on the drafts. But I think that's well said from Zane. I think Eric and Travis kind of stick out. They can certainly game now and compete. They're good teammates, great teammates, and can hold their own. But things get a little bit tricky with the timelines.
All right. Anything else? It's getting hot in here.
Well,
I
got to
submit an assignment.
There. Let's see. Dinky McDinkmaster did say, will Zane agree to get a free sand tattoo if the Fives win the championship in MLP?
I like how he caveated it with, like, free. Like,
yeah, that was the main concern. Is the
we would all have tattoos if we didn't have to pay for it.
I got a sand tattoo now. Like, I'm getting a clown's tattoo if we win this season.
What do you think of the revised logo? Do you know there's a revised logo?
No, I did know there was a fun. So
not a planted question.
I'm going to answer your question by not answering your question at all and telling you a different story.
That's so unlike you.
He called it. He called that 3 years ago, bro. Evan comes up to us at the Ranchers thing, and I'm going to swear one more time because it's a quote, okay? He comes up to us and says, we didn't get you. You're going to You're going to the Fives. And Jenny goes, fuck.
Beep.
What am I going to wear? I'm like, we'll figure it out. So
she's
anyway,
a star. She should be focused on that.
She's priceless.
Exactly. So we'll end it on that.
Pick a ball.
Boom.
Yeah. I'm not gonna lie, Dyler had fun, yeah.